This is Wine, Women, and Revolution with your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Wine, Women, and Revolution. I'm your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can find us online at www.njrevolutionradio.com. Get us wherever you get your podcasts from. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the big things. And, you know, if you can, we really appreciate it whenever you can go and click on that contribute button. We are not taking any corporate money here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. We are a voice for the activist community, so we need the activist community to support us. Tonight, we are doing kind of a follow-up to an article I wrote. Maybe 3 weeks ago, I wrote an article about ORV damage in the Pinelands region, which generated a little bit of controversy, a little more than I was expecting. So tonight, here in the studio with me, I have Jason Howe, who is a fellow Piney. We'll explain what that means in a second. And he also works for Pinelands Preservation. Welcome to the studio, Jason.
Hi, Heather. Great to be here.
So, first off, you ask if I would identify you as a Piney. What's a Piney for anyone who's not from the region?
Well, you know, it's a term that means different things to different people. To me, it means somebody that lives in the Pine Barrens, knows the place, and knows how to exist in the place. And, you know, maybe they've had a long family history there, too.
And your family's lived here for a while?
Yeah. My family goes back to when the Swedes and the Finns migrated here in the 1700s. So we're talking, you know, a good long time. We're not, you know, not Lenny Lenape, but, you know, we've been here
a while. Yeah. You're part of the climate at this point in time, as it were. So, one thing that we both have in common is we really appreciate this region, the Pinelands region. It's a very special region. And I thought it would be a good place to start would be to talk about why this area is such a special and unique area that really isn't like many other places in the planet.
Yeah, so one thing that people should know about the Pine Barrens, also some people call it the Pinelands National Reserve, which is the political title for the place. It's pretty much how you'd think of a national park. It is that biodiverse, it is that unique, it is that special. It just isn't managed by one overarching agency like the National Park Service. National Park Service does, or is supposed to have, some representation in the Pinelands, but they haven't appointed their commissioner to the Pinelands Commission, which is the overseeing body.
And why are they saying they haven't done that? Like, I know, what happened to the old one?
Unfortunately, there was an appointee to the commission. So the commission has 15 members, one of which is appointed by the Secretary of Interior, who, as of recently, was Ryan Zinke. I don't know if that's changed. I know there's a lot of flux in that whole department.
It's not a very stable department at the moment.
That secretary has not been making appointments over a variety of different government bodies, and the Pinelands Commission has been one that's been ignored, perhaps fortunately, perhaps unfortunately, depending on how you look at it.
Right. All right. So it's like a national park, and it's a very special, unique area. Was there any specific things about the area that really, like...
I can say things that usually surprise people, like the Pinelands has 28 orchid species. The Pinelands has wildflowers that grow literally nowhere else on Earth. The Pine Barrens has wildlife that, you know, this place is the stronghold for many different species of wildlife, like Pine Barrens tree frogs, northern pine snake. In New Jersey, the stronghold for corn snakes, for tiger salamanders, for many different species that really depend on this place. And they depend on us to treat it well, too, which I think will lead into your next topic.
And some of these species are, like, critically endangered, like swamp pink, for example, which is one of the little pink flowers that grows in the area. This is a highly endangered plant, and some of the other snake species are fairly endangered. They're very protected species.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you value wildlife, if you value natural beauty and these special things that, you know, you might only see once or twice in your lifetime, but they're out there. And if you appreciate that those things continue to exist, then it's important to make sure the place that they depend on is treated as well as it should be.
All right, which I think is going to lead into the discussion about ORV damage in the region. First off, why do we even allow ORVs in the region? Do you have any history of why that decision was made?
So because the Pine Barrens has never had an overarching management entity, no overarching vision for what it should be, what it is, what it can be, people have basically been able to do what they want to do with the place for a long time. In some cases, that's been all right. Like cranberry farming, generally that's been okay. Blueberry farming, generally that's been okay. But in the case of recreation, where you have, you know, thousands of ATVs, Jeeps, trucks, just doing whatever they want on the landscape, that has caused a lot of problems. And trying to bring that in under control is where we're at now.
After so long of it being uncontrolled, people are pushing back a little bit, like, oh, we've been enjoying playing in the region, we don't want to have to preserve it now, is basically, I guess, their stance.
So there's a lot of people that have been, you know, recently very activated to make a change on this issue. Either they love the wildlife and they're seeing the impacts there. They love the plants, they're seeing the impacts there. Or they just want to get out into the woods. You know, if you have just a regular four-wheel drive vehicle or an all-wheel drive SUV or even, you know, a sedan in a lot of cases, in years past, you were able to drive on the old sand roads, which were made long ago for logging, bog iron, Native American trails. The old sand roads, dirt roads, you could take in two-wheel drive or standard four-wheel drive, whereas today, because of the influx of the place being seen not as a nature preserve but as an off-road vehicle park by certain groups of people, you can't even drive to a lot of places anymore because of how bad the roads are getting, the old sand roads are getting out there. And they're very expensive to maintain.
Yeah, I've seen that personally myself, that there's some campgrounds out not too far from Batstow, you know, Quaker Bridge, you know, that road there leads to some of the campgrounds. And there's no way you could get a car back there. The ruts and, you know, they're 4 feet deep, some of those ruts in the roads there.
So for public access, you know, there aren't a lot of amenities. You know, say if you go to Smoky Mountain National Park in North Carolina and Tennessee, you drive into the park, there's an entrance, there's a welcome center. The right. Pine Barrens doesn't have that. I mean, right. There's places that can sort of serve that purpose, like Batstow, Wells Mills. There's a few nature centers around, but the access for the public, you know, it was really dependent on those old sand roads in a lot of cases. And the more damage they get from off-road vehicles, the less the people have the chance to actually get into the place and experience the place and enjoy it.
But the roads are not the only issue. These people, the ATV crowd, at least some of them, are driving through protected ponds and through more protected areas. What kind of damage is that doing?
So, I would reference anyone that's really interested in this topic to look up Mark Dimitrov. He's a professor at Stockton, and he is a paraglacial geologist. So he studies areas where there wasn't glacial activity, but there was effects from glaciers. So the South Jersey is one of those places where there was never a glacier over top of South Jersey, but we had glacial effects in the form of these really high intensity winds. And so they flowed over South Jersey, which was at the time just an open barren tundra with sandy soil, carved out certain areas, formed dunes, sand dunes, which still exist today, formed little pockets in the sand, and those became ponds as the water levels rose, as the ice age declined. And those ponds have become, you know, really important habitat for those wildlife species and some of those plants that we talked about earlier, like pine barrens, tree frogs. They need those ponds to reproduce. So for thousands of years, these frogs have been coming back to sometimes the same pond to lay their eggs, to mate, to do what frogs do. And now we're seeing those ponds impacted by people taking monster trucks, ATVs, and other off-road vehicles into them and just driving around in circles until the pond is completely devegetated, polluted, and destroyed as part of the habitat.
It just becomes like a mud pit. It's not really a pond anymore.
Right. I mean, over a long period of time, perhaps they can recover to some form of their natural state, but it's going to take a long time, and it's going to take keeping the vehicles out. So we formed a volunteer group to try to push the state to make that happen, to put in barriers to these vehicles. So it's not as easy as just turning off the sand road and driving into a pond. Now there's going to be some physical barriers in the way, wooden guardrail, other things like that.
And how's that developing? Are we getting more and more barriers put up, or is there some impediments to getting those barriers?
In some cases it's happening, but there has been activism to prevent those kind of measures from taking place in the Pine Barrens. So there's people that don't want much done about this topic. And some of them have the ear of some people within the Department of Environmental Protection. And unfortunately, they have been very successful in preventing large measures against this problem.
Now, are these ATV enthusiasts or just other people that don't see it as a problem?
It's a variety of people. There's a lot of paranoia involved. So a lot of the off-road vehicle folks will spread rumors that, you know, we just want to close off the forest, where that's not our intention at all. We want to make it accessible for the general public. So it's a competing vision. Our vision is nature preserve plus public access plus some, you know, harmonious use. The other vision is off-road vehicle park, and that is what we are doing everything we can to prevent.
Right. I mean, once something's damaged, like you said, it may make a comeback, maybe. I mean, some of these endangered species, maybe not, if they have so few holdout places. But I know that was something that the ATV enthusiasts were talking about. Like, oh, we've been taking pictures of things are starting to grow back in some of the ponds that we drove through. But it's probably never going back to what it was before someone decided to drive a monster truck through it.
Yeah, it's complicated. You know, it's not a lawn. So if you drive over a lawn, okay, it looks bad, but maybe you can put some sod down and fix it. It's not like that. Sometimes disturbance can actually be a good thing, but not frequent disturbance. Just, you know, if there was a forest fire, that's a good kind of disturbance, where you release nutrients into the soil, maybe seeds are released. Maybe the canopy opens so sunlight gets the forest floor and things can grow. This kind of disturbance, where it's not just once in a while, it's every day, it's every weekend, it's becoming a real problem, especially for species that need the ponds and the dunes and the land itself. So anything that nests on the ground is completely wiped out by off-road vehicles. And the nature of the pinelands, where it's this flat terrain, it makes it really easy. There aren't mountains to get in the way of these. There aren't big boulders to get in the way of these vehicles. They can just drive through the woods and into these places. So the most important thing that we can do is to make sure these places are monitored, if they need protections, those protections should get installed.
And the barriers we're talking about, they're like a wooden, almost sort of small wooden, like, wall type thing that prevents people from driving into them?
Yeah, it's just like essentially a wooden guardrail. That's the best case scenario that we can do. So that's 8x8 lumber. You know, they're expensive, unfortunately, but, you know, we can get grant funding, we can get these things in place. But the barriers within the bureaucracy have made this really difficult. And so a project that I had known about that needed to be resolved on a dune last year, I didn't even bring to the DEP because I knew it politically it just wouldn't go through. Fortunately, with some of the new people taking office, like Olivia Glenn, who is the new state parks director, they see the need for these things. And if there's enough willpower in those new appointments, they can press through the bureaucracy where there might be some resistance to actually making any change. Change is really the problem. There's a lot of people that don't want to see change one way or another. And so pushing for that change is really what we're all about.
Have we heard anything about from where Murphy might stand on, from, you know, the people he's appointing, or where his opinions are on this?
My feeling is that if the issue was to rise in saliency, that those people at the top of the DEP and Governor Murphy would be with us. The problem is South Jersey often gets ignored. And so we have to figure out not just how to promote South Jersey, but to promote the Pine Barrens and the Pinelands National Reserve, this one-of-a-kind ecosystem in the United States, how we get that attention to our government officials.
And what kind of things can people do if they're like, you know, hey, this is silly that we're letting... And we're not, actually, let's back it up for a second. We're not just letting, you know, weekend people drive around. We actually have endurance races and things like the Jeep Jamboree that are going on, where hundreds of Jeeps come and drive around together. Like, who approves that?
So that would go through a special use permit with State Parks and Forestry, and then they would also have to get a permit from the Pinelands Commission. The routes are reviewed, but just a review of a permitted route doesn't give you the full picture of what's happening, because they review what's happening that day in that moment. Okay, so those 300 people that are coming from all over, now they know the Pine Barrens as a place to off-road. And so now those 300 people bring 300 more people, and then they post it on the internet, and then the GPS locations get shared, and then the roads get worse, and then people start doing things they shouldn't because they don't understand the place, they don't know what's right, what's wrong. They'll go into a pond, they'll go over a dune, they think nothing of it. You know, some people are openly anti-environment. You know, they don't care if there's a tree frog that lives there, they don't care if there's a pine snake there. But a lot of people, they just have no way of knowing. They're not from here. They come here once, do what they want to do, and move on.
And it's very hard to educate people that are just here for a weekend. They're not in the area. They don't get it. So it's a very challenging thing to try to share this education with people from outside of the region.
Yeah, we're trying, but from outside of the region, forget about it. It's just not going to happen. Inside the region, we can, through social media, try to share, you know, why these places are important, and maybe that'll start to spread. And I think in certain cases that actually has begun to work, both from our efforts and from efforts from off-road vehicle advocates who want to maintain at least some level of being able to drive through the woods, which I'm all for as well.
Mm-hmm. So the, you know, let's call them the good actors, are trying to educate the people a little bit that are out there just driving around to splash mud on their cars, for example.
Yeah, it's an interesting bunch of people, and it's not one, you know, single group. It's all kinds of different people, mm-hmm. all kinds of different motivations, but really, they just want to not be told what to do in a lot of cases. And while I sympathize with that, it's just not practical when we have 8 million people in this state and millions surrounding the state that are all looking to these smaller and smaller pockets of wild space to pursue whatever recreational activity they, you know, they're interested in.
Right. And I think anyone who listened to my interview with Doug Peacock, he really stressed the importance of preserving wilderness and wild spaces for not just the species that are there, but for their value for us as well as people, that there's a lot of emotional and almost spiritual growth and development you get from experiencing wilderness. Then there's getting to be less and less wilderness all the time. So it is very special, and in general, in the Pinelands especially, because it's so unique, is extremely special.
Yeah, I completely agree with that sentiment, because to not be able to take a walk in a forest and hear nothing but bird songs and the wind and maybe a river or stream, maybe a frog chirping, to just experience nature as it was. Oh, I would find that very impoverished if you're not able to experience that. So preserving these places, what we have left, I think is critically important. Not to mention that all of our drinking water in South Jersey comes from the Pine Barrens.
Right, yeah. There's 1 million people get their drinking water from the Kirkwood Cohansey Aquifer, which is underneath the Pine Barrens. And it's a very shallow aquifer. It's very easily subject to damage, to pollution, which I assume there must be some sort of pollution that's coming off of all of these cars driving around in this region.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's certainly oils leaked into the streams and the ponds that are that these vehicles drive in. One other thing that's interesting to me that maybe most people don't know, if you take a pipe and nail it into the sand, which this whole area for the most part is sand, you will hit water in 10 or 20 feet. Which I think that might be an amazing thing to know, right, for most people, that we are basically floating on, we're sitting on a, on basically an inland sea of water underneath our feet, which is the Kirkwood Cohansey Aquifer. And all that means is there's water trapped in between the sand particles. And as soon as you, you know, put a pipe down in there, you're going to hit water. And that's everyone's drinking water. A lot of people are confused and they think sand somehow purifies the water. It right. doesn't. It's clean because it's coming out of the sky and it's going through the ground and there's no pollutants that it passes through. But in areas where there are pollutants, it's highly, you know, subject to contamination. So we have to be very careful with it, even more careful than other areas, because there's no buffering agents in our soil. It's just sand. So water that passes through it will pick up anything.
And not even much of that, really. The sand is such a thin layer. I mean, there are places like blue holes and spungs in the Pine Barrens, which are like little ponds, where you're just literally looking into the Kirkwood Cohansey Aquifer. Like, there's not, that's just the aquifer right there that you're looking at, or yeah. swimming in the case of a blue hole.
Yeah, and the rivers. The rivers are the aquifer.
Right.
It's on the surface.
And the water in this area, too, was an interesting thing I learned. It's so very ancient that it's a really old body of water that ever since there were nuclear tests, all water has radioactive isotopes, unless that water has been underground from before the nuclear testing. And they've tested some water in various places in the Kirkwood Cohansey, and it does not have radioactive isotopes. That's how old the water is. That it's from before nuclear, the very first nuclear tests.
Wow, yeah, that's amazing.
So, you know, it's definitely a special and unique area, and that's why, you know, we're fighting to preserve it every way that we can. Which did bring to the next topic I wanted to touch on at least a little bit, was yeah. we had a little bit of a victory for a war we've been fighting, what, like 8 years now?
Yeah, the first Pinelands Commission meeting I attended on the South Jersey Gas Pipeline, the BL England Pipeline, was 2013. So I'm sure they had it cooking up before that, but 2013 was the first Pinelands Commission meeting I attended on that. And just the other day, it was announced that the BL England plant will no longer be seeking to repower as natural gas. And so the whole justification for the South Jersey Gas Pipeline was to serve that potentially repowered plant at BL England, which is no more. And so that justification that the Pinelands Commission made the decision on is moot, null and void, essentially. At least that's how it should come out.
Yeah, hopefully. And, you know, that's part of it, that, you know, we're talking about this aquifer. That was one of our big concerns, was that who knows what might have happened with either the directional drilling of the pipeline. You know, when they do that directional drilling, they just pump this bentonite clay to lubricate the drill bits. And if that spilled, that's like kitty litter, essentially, that it would could easily contaminate any sort of aquifer it goes anywhere near.
Yeah, yeah. If they have a breach of hydraulic flat fracking fluids, that bentonite, in a wetland, oh, forget about that wetland. It's done. In, especially in the Pinelands, because we have you know, an acidic ecosystem. If you take that clay, which is going to be, you know, not acidic, it's going to be, you know, more towards the base end of the pH spectrum, that's going to totally ruin any kind of a wetland that it's going through. So you get invasive species growing in there. They will outcompete the native species. On top of that, you know, the water itself. So they, just to test the pipe, they put 100, 200,000 gallons of water through a natural gas pipe. And that water, they're pumping out of the earth. And so any wetlands...
One sec. All right, go ahead.
So the South Jersey Gas Pipeline was a problem for all sorts of reasons. One of the main reasons is that they were going to, you know, impugn the rules that govern the Pinelands. So they based, the Pinelands Commission based their justification on passing this pipeline on that, on a little phrase in a thing called the Comprehensive Management Plan, which is basically the rule book for what you can do and you can't do in the Pine Barrens. And there, the phrase was, a pipeline can be built essentially if it, and this is verbatim, primarily only serves the needs of the Pinelands. Now go ahead and sort that phrase out.
It is a complicated phrase.
So their justification was that because the BL England plant is technically in the Pinelands National Reserve, that it meets that pretty narrow definition. Unfortunately, you know, that power goes all throughout the state. It isn't, you know, the nature of the grid, it isn't localized.
Right.
So any projects that could come in the future, like, say, any oil and gas development, if they want to, if the Trump administration succeeds in drilling offshore and tries to pass pipelines through the oil pipelines through the Pine Barrens, they could potentially use that justification by the Pinelands Commission. So hopefully, with this decision by the Attorney General to notify the court that the whole justification that the Pinelands Commission used is no longer void, hopefully a precedent is avoided from their previous decision on allowing that South Jersey gas pipeline.
Right. Hopefully that they'll see that this, I mean, they're going to try to say now, oh, we need redundancies in the grid. I've already heard them saying that more, but you know, the original, it should have to go back through the process again, minimally, as a new application, not just the same application.
So that's a great point. The gas company isn't done. They want that pipeline because they make money either way. If they build the pipeline, they get to increase their rates. Their rates for anyone that uses gas in South Jersey. And they get to pay for the project as well as charge a profit. So building these projects, it's only profitable for the gas company. They have no disincentive.
Right.
They only have incentive to build these things. And it's up to us to make sure that they're held accountable, not just for their users, for what we allow in the Pine Barrens. Because if we allow a gas pipeline, maybe an oil pipeline could be built down the road. And if for anyone that's concerned about fighting catastrophic climate change, this is where we have some power. We can put an end to fossil fuel development and infrastructure in the Pine Barrens. And this is the start, I think, a very positive start.
Yeah, this is where we start winning, I think. This is our, you know, you can build off of one success and just keep snowballing the successes. And it is important to definitely, A, put pressure on Murphy at this point in time to say no new fossil fuel infrastructure anywhere, because he sets the tone for everything that's going to happen in the state. So if he's committed to no more fossil fuels, then that'll trickle down to everyone else under his administration.
Which leads to a really great point in that in Ocean County, what they call the Southern Reliability Pipeline, which is another giant high-pressure gas pipeline, frack gas pipeline, miles of that pipeline are laying on the side of Route 539 right now and about to go in the ground. Now, they don't have the road opening permits in Burlington County yet to complete the pipeline. But before the lawsuits filed by Pinelands Preservation Alliance and Sierra Club get to the appellate court, they're trying to put the whole pipeline in the ground, so it's something of a, you know, an already done deal.
Right. They're trying to force the court's hand. Like, even if the court said, you know, wanted to say, oh, we're not giving you the closure permits, well, like, well, we've already done it now, you know. Better to ask forgiveness than permission, kind of, and, you know, saying, well, we already did it, so you just kind of have to give us the permits. But really, they're not going to lose money no matter what they do.
they get to raise rates. The only case would be if they're forced to pull it out of the ground, they would have to pay for that themselves. So, and that would be good for the unions, too, because they get work on both ends of it. They put it in and they get to take it out. So any activist interested in this topic should be focused right now on Burlington County.
Yes. Because
that is where the fight is going to go. The freeholders of Burlington County and every lawmaker therein has to know that you care about this issue and that you will refuse to let that pipeline be put in the ground in Burlington County.
Yeah, friend of the show, Agnes from People Over Pipelines, definitely is a good resource to follow her Facebook page, her website.
Agnes yeah. Marcel is the best, absolutely. Yeah. She will be leading the charge, I'm sure, on this one.
Definitely, because it's right in her backyard where they're starting to put the pipeline. Like, they already have some pipe in, and that's right down the street from where she is located. And it's horrible to see that just these miles of pipe laying along the road ready to go in. So definitely activists won this battle, the BL England battle. Activists have to mobilize in however way they can and win another battle now.
Yeah, this is the front line. This is the front line of climate change. We're at it. And if you want to get involved, this is the time. We're coming off a fresh victory. Let's make another one.
And there is no other time. You know, they say we have at best 10, 12 years to get entirely off fossil fuels, or it can become extinction level climate change, that it's going to be nasty. It's going to be really hard for humanity to survive unless we can do this in 10 to 12 years. So you have to get involved. If you have families, kids, care about the future in general, you've got to get involved in this fight. Any closing words or last things you wanted to talk about tonight?
I would just say, make sure this spring, listeners, get out in the woods. Out in the pine barrens. It is a place like no other. And if you have to start somewhere, go to Batstow, take a walk on the Batona Trail, and at least start there. But the place is enormous, over 650,000 acres of preserved open space. This is one of the last wild places on the East Coast, and you need to know about it. So right. Please go out there.
I know I have North Jersey listeners, and you guys never come down here. And, I live down here. You can come and visit me, and I'll take you for a hike around Batstow personally. I'll start doing, outreach to, North Jersey Hike with Heather, whatever it takes to get people to come down here and see what it is we're fighting for and understand why we're so passionate about it. Thank you so much. It's been a great time having you here in the studio.
Yeah, thank you. I had a great talking.
To you guys, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you so much. We appreciate when you share our stuff around social media. Help us expand our reach. Right now it's just a couple of us. We're trying to run around and cover everything in the state. So everything you can do to help us and help us grow this network. We are the voice for the activist community. And we're nothing without you guys. We are just here because of you, because of your donations that keep us on the air. We try to keep things as cheap as possible here at NJRR, but we do have some monthly expenses, so even if you can only contribute $5 a month, you can support us on Patreon or PayPal, whatever it is. We appreciate it so much. You help keep us on the air. You make us what we are. The future is yours to create. Go out there and create it.